This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, February 17th, 2010.
Calling this meeting to order. This is the employee assembly meeting for Wednesday, February 17th, 2010 in 316 Day Hall. Jason Seymour, chair. It is 12:18. I'm going to do the roll call. David Brooks.
Here.
Pemba Dongtao has called and said she's not able to make the meeting. Tanya Grove.
Here.
Linda Kroll is not present. Ned LaSalle.
Here.
Leon Lawrence.
Here.
Alan Mittman.
Here.
Leslie Morris.
Here.
Gemma Osborne.
Here.
On the phone. Tim Ostrander.
Here.
Celie Phillips.
Here.
Jason Seymour present. Gary Stewart.
Here.
Beth McKinney. Employee elected trustee. We're also joined today by one of our ex officio members, Mary Opperman. And Ben Havener of GPSA. And we have Peggy Beach from the Office of Assemblies, Ari, and Amy O'Donnell. Ari Epstein, sorry. Okay, are there any late additions to the agenda? All right, then we're going to jump right into our business of the day, which is going to be a presentation from Paul Streeter and Mary Opperman, also attending, for additional Q&A. So welcome, Paul, and turn it over to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So Jason was kind enough to send some questions in advance. I will try to address them and maybe make some starting comments and then work through the questions, because I think the questions kind of get at what I wanted to talk about anyway. So I just thought it might be helpful for you to understand where our current financial situation is. We've used different numbers over the last year, and I just thought it might be useful that we start there and just try to clarify where that is. So our fiscal situation is this. Last year we ended it with a deficit of roughly $88, $89 million on the IFTA campus. That's what the real deficit was last year. That's where we ended. Our budgeted deficit for the current year is $68 million. So the trustee-approved budget for the current year is a $68 million deficit. And right now, we think we're on track with that. We think we're beating it by a little bit. But the important number is a $68 million deficit. And as we look to next year, we're in the process of determining what that deficit will be next year. It will be something significantly less than that. We're in the process of trying to figure that out. But I think it's important to kind of understand. We've talked about numbers that span 4 or 5 years, and I think that's added to the confusion. So I just find you to understand where we're actually at. Last year, as I said, we were $88 million in deficit. Had we done nothing, that deficit would have grown to upwards in the $120 million range. We did do something. We took some, campus-wide, we took some hard actions within units, institutionally within units, $50 million budget reduction. We've had the SRI program. We had a bunch of activities that occurred that helped reduce that deficit to $68 million. For the current year. If we were to do nothing, that deficit would grow again next year. State funds are going down, the resources from the endowment are going down, but we are going to do something. And where we will end up next year is going to be something significantly less than $68 million. And I'd gladly come back, or our Vice President for Planning and Budget, come back and talk to you about that, in a couple months as that budget process settles out. But I'm just going to stop there and see, does that help give you an understanding of where we're at financially, and are there questions about that? Or Mary, anything you want to add to? Does that help? Everyone got it? Okay.
So that $68 million is for 2010?
2010, yep.
And that ends as of end of June? That fiscal year's over?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I forgot to mention that we are joined today by the with the Cornell Chronicle, so... Mm-hmm. And photography as well.
So with that as the foundation, we do have a budget problem. Just to give you a scale, that budget problem on the scale of the campus budget is a $2 billion campus budget. So it is a significant problem. On the scale of the whole campus, it's a smaller number. Everyone can judge relative size, but it's a smaller number. As I said, we are going to do stuff. We are going to take action between this year and next year. Part of that action is what you've probably read about, called the Initiative Coordination Office. And what that really represents, it's not a new office. It's really job responsibilities that I've assumed But really the work is being done by a set of initiative teams that have been charged around campus, around several different areas. So let me just run through those really quickly. We've got an initiative going in the procurement area in which we're looking for, really aggressively looking for cost savings in purchasing, how we buy goods and services. So both from a process standpoint, from vendor negotiations, you know, improving our price negotiations with vendors, et cetera. But we think there's a ripe opportunity in there to realize some significant savings in the non-personnel arena that will help us over time. I guess what I would step back about the financial situation again. We're sitting at a $68 million deficit right now. We are not trying to solve this in 1 year. We do have the trustees, you know, in our financial planning with the trustees have allowed us to think about this on a multi-year basis. So as we think about something like procurement, we do think there are significant savings to be had. It might take a couple years to get there, but we're aggressively pursuing, you know, these savings in the procurement arena. We've got an initiative going around facilities, asking questions about how do we deliver facility services on campus? How do we deliver them both centrally and at the unit level? How do we integrate those services? So kind of the integration of the services, you know, between central and units, the service delivery model, how do we actually provide maintenance? Utilities, thank you. A really aggressive effort around energy conservation in the utilities arena. There are opportunities out there from, you know, system controls, investing in system controls, to just simply making decisions around and changing practices so that we can change how quickly we turn over air and laboratory space. There are some activities our facility folks are aware of and are trying to tee up for us to consider changing that we do think we can make some significant savings in that arena. And again, it doesn't affect people at all. So facilities, energy conservation, in the IT arena, similar to facilities, we're looking at IT services. So when I say that, it's really desktop support services. How do we how do we support desktops, which will begin with a question of how standard can we go with desktops on campus, standard setup of desktops, and how do we do application development? So how do we build new systems and looking at those? We think there's some real efficiencies to be gained in those arenas. IT is one of these areas, I think, similar to facilities, but certainly in the IT, where there'll be questions asked about what are the decision rights? What decisions have to be made in order to control in the IT arena? Or gain efficiency, there's probably a set of decisions on how we do things that need to be made. Who actually controls those decision rights? And bringing clarity to that. We're an institution, as you all know, that's very decentralized. We don't have good clarity on roles and responsibilities. We're looking to achieve that, and we think with that, you know, we gain some efficiency and certainly effectiveness. I mean, it's important to realize we're trying to address a budget problem, but, you know, more importantly, we're trying to make sure the university can operate effectively on the backside of having less resources. The reality is we have less resources. The reality is we're still going to have the same number of students here, offering the same degree programs largely, and we need to be able to do that real effectively and in a satisfying manner so that employees actually feel good and feel like they have a job that's satisfying. We can only do that if we take a real rational approach to that. So that's kind of underlying everything that I'm talking about here. That's the end game. Balancing the budget is part of it, but having an effective and satisfying place to work is as important, if not more important, on a long-term sustainability. So procurement, facilities, energy conservation, IT. And then there's one administrative arena. We've termed it a couple different, you hear a term called administrative structures. We've termed it in our communications as around organization and management of support activities. But what we're really trying to understand is how do we structure support operations on campus? How do we structure them? How do we manage them? We're starting with a question of just what are they? Making sure we actually understand. When I, you know, give these other areas, procurement, facilities, IT, they're talking about very specific work streams I think people can think about. We're trying to recognize and understand in this other review is what is it that everyone else is doing that's critically important to managing within your own individual units. Understanding what that work is and then being able to think about how most effectively it integrates with these other activities and how most effectively just kind of structure it. So those are the broad areas we're looking at. We've got some other work being done on looking at just funding commitments coming out of the provost office. So the provost does make annual allocations to units and make some limited term allocations. We're looking at those to see if we can just simply end some of those commitments, or at least understand how they might naturally end and how that informs our budget process. So we're certainly looking at specific decisions in that arena. And we're looking at, within the division of student and academic services, of work in that arena around housing and dining operations, how we're delivering most effectively, efficiently around. Are there some opportunities, health services, and athletics? So there's a specific review going around that. All told, we think there are significant savings to be had there. The original estimates from the consultants that helped us kind of frame up where should we be focusing our efforts was that there's potentially $90 million of savings. I don't know if that's the number. We don't know that yet. We're in the process of actually working to validate those numbers and have those numbers inform both our fiscal 11 budget process and this multi-year financial planning. So it's a lot of really aggressive, a lot of work going on in a really aggressive, fast pace right now. It's messy. It's messy because we're doing it so fast paced with a lot of other things going on, but it's really important. So I'm going to stop there and see if there's questions around that.
I can ask you a question on specifically the ICO groups that you just mentioned. What type of time frame are these groups on? Because I know IT has released a little subsection of the website, and I know I've heard of some of their working groups. What are the time frames of them to make their recommendations to the provost and president?
Yep, so the time frame for recommendations really the end of April. We're asking for an interim reporting in March to help inform our budget planning. We do have to, our fiscal year starts July 1, so we do, and we have to go to the trustees with a budget in May. So we can't wait till the end of April to really understand more specifically. So we're asking for some interim reporting out of these reviews to help us understand what they see as potential savings opportunities, both in fiscal 11 and on a multi-year basis. So I'm not expecting those will be final reports. It's not with that kind of accountability. But we are asking for some best estimate at that point.
So like strong drafts by mid-March and then final by end of April.
Yeah, I would say it's really not even asking for a report in mid-March. We're asking for really two things. One is a savings estimate, and two, given where they're at in the review, what are the critical kind of enabling actions or enabling decisions, whether they be policy or practice decisions that they're envisioning need to occur? So it's, again, an interim reporting on that basis, and then with a more formal or complete, let's say that way, more complete report.
When will more information of what these groups are be working on be shared with the community at large for feedback?
So the place to find the information on it is really drive everything off the reimagining site. There's a place there within Reimagining that has the Initiative Coordination Office on there. Mm-hmm. Within that, you can see the reviews that we're talking about. And there's a place in there to provide input. And as we start putting more information out about each of these areas, we'll be putting it on that website. Watch for it in the Chronicle. I mean, we're aggressive, working aggressively to use the communication vehicles that our Office of Communication set up, Chronicle in particular, and we'll be pushing information out through that arena about what's going on. You'll see there was an article out about IT, I think it was last week. There's an article coming out about procurement this week. We're expecting an article about facilities the following week, just to help inform everyone as to what's the nature of the review.
So we should see more things under the ICO section being updated within the next few weeks.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be updating as it goes out, but I think the Chronicle is really the vehicle we're using right now in terms of a steady presence on a weekly basis of trying to make sure we're talking about the activities on an ongoing basis. And then you'll post that into this website. So the place you'll be able to kind of stay on top of it, if you will, is the website. But
yeah, you should sign up to the Chronicle that gives you periodic bulletins and the materials that Paul is talking about have been delivered, just standalone, not whole Chronicle, but very helpful. And you can get that right to your desktop.
From the Chronicle?
Online,
okay.
Pick it on their listserv.
If you have suggestions on the website, there's a place to put in suggestions. If you have suggestions, whether it be in the IT arena or facilities arena or whatever arena, send them in, and we'll make sure that they get filtered to the right group, get pushed to the right group, not filtered, but pushed to the right group for for action. I've had folks email me directly when they see the name in the paper, and so. What else around that? I don't want to miss the other questions because there were some other ones out there, but I don't want to leave this topic either.
Is the time frame for the overall deficit situation 5 years? Are we saying that? Is it 2015? What we're tentatively
is the number,
saying?
Yeah, 2015 is the number we're planning towards right now. And you know, again, the modeling we've done, we're suggesting we can do it with a lot of hard work and some tough actions. But that's the time frame we're working on as the trustees. And it's really, you know, the timing on how we do it on a year-to-year basis is, you know, the president and the provost. As I said, it's more important that we do this right than we do this in, you know, 1 year. And I think certainly from the president's standpoint, it's more important we do it right than we do it in 5 years. So it takes six and we do it six. But the reality is the campus can't take this as a long-term effort. We do need to, so there's a, many of us who are, right, there's many of us who want to do it as aggressively as possible, not to be onerous, but as a community, we can't sustain this kind of ongoing, you know, dribs and drabs of it. So we need to. That's why we're really pushing hard on this, these savings in this arena. If we can get, you know, an informed view of how we take procurement, for example, of how much savings we think we can get in the procurement arena and when. It may shake. Maybe we do a little bit less this year because we really think the wind's going to come next year. But it will because we have, you know, some, you know, an intelligent, you know, an informed basis and plan on where we get it. My hope, individually, my hope is that we come out of the next few months with a plan, knowing what areas we will make reductions in, and the timing of that, in a pretty informed basis that we could communicate and folks know about, you know, where we're heading and the time frame we're heading on. So would you want to add anything on that?
And I think the president's hope is that we get a plan that we can communicate to people. And so folks know what it is that we're aiming towards and that we move in that direction. And his goal has always been that we get as much of this on the non-personnel side as possible, and that ramp-up may be slow, and that's what hits us the time. But that if we can push those non-personnel savings, that everyone will help us get there on the non-personnel side, even if it takes us a little bit longer, and it's just taking us a while to figure out those, particularly on the procurement side, how much we can actually get, taking us a little bit longer than we thought to understand those percentages.
Would it be safe to assume there'll be some flexibility in terms of if you see a direction that's not working, then modifying it to make it work, or keeping that you're not going to commit to these changes now and then, oh, look, it's not working a year and a half down the road. I don't know if I'm being...
Well, we have to balance the budget. And I think so what we have to do is understand that is the one thing that we don't have any choice about. So if we see that something isn't working, what we have to understand is that we'll have to find a different avenue. So I think what we have to commit ourselves to is transparency to the community. So if we head down a pathway and it's not working, what we have to do is be honest with the community and say so. This is where we all said we'd try to go. We've been trying that. It's not working. What we have to do
instead. I think our challenge is going to be in the definition of what's not working. And let me use PCARD as an example in the procurement arena. We as an institution have put out, I don't know if anyone in here has a PCARD, you don't have to raise your hand, but we have a lot of PCARDs, thousands of, you know, $4,000 to $5,000 PCARDs out in the system. It's a really, really quick way of buying goods and services. And it's really ineffective in trying to achieve these savings that we need to achieve. So we're going to take action. My guess is there's going to be a policy decision that will say we need to reduce the amount of P-cards on campus by a significant amount. So you all who might have some, or faculty or whatever,
you can have my back.
We can take care of it. So that's one. But it's really on those that use it. This is going to be disruptive. And for those people who lose a P-card and have to go through a different process, they may say it's not working. But institutionally, we absolutely need to happen because we need to drive our procurement. You'll see this in the article, hopefully. We need to put all our spending activity into a single stream.
So then we can understand the vendors, we can negotiate better pricing with the vendors, and we can change our practices around vendor management and get better pricing. But in doing that, we're going to give up the flexibility and freedom of being able to buy things with a P card. And so that change, where someone's going to say that's not working, I think we're institutionally, and it's going to take the leadership of everyone, I think you all included, is helping to bring about this kind of cultural change at the institution, that sometimes we're going to have to give up something that for the greater good, it needs to be done. And in procurement, this P-card issue is a clear example, because I guarantee everyone who's active with a P-card and we take it away is going to say it's not working.
Right. Yeah. I don't think what we've done yet is make clear what the choices really are.
Yes.
I would say we haven't been as effective as we need to be in helping people understand that the choices that we have available to us are all very painful. And I think what we have to do is do a better job of explaining that there really aren't really that many choices left in the organization. We're down by 700 positions already. And one of the difficulties with a highly decentralized organization is, do you all know the term NIMBY? Mm-hmm. Not in my backyard. But, you know, I do think that most people assume that someone else has a lot that is stupid. They should just stop doing their stupid stuff, and no one else will notice. And one of the advantages of being in an institutional role for a long time is maybe I have rose-colored glasses, but there's actually not very much that happens on this campus that doesn't affect in a positive manner the experiences of the students. Almost everything we have left to pick from is hard to choose. And so when we have the choice of choosing the way we spend money on what we buy, or the way we use our utilities, I believe this community will come together if we make the choices left available clearer. And so I believe the community will come together, will rally, and pull together on the procurement and utility side if we make those choices clear. And we just haven't, we're all very, very busy. We haven't necessarily been able to do that yet. So that's just going to take us a little bit of time. It won't be everything. It's not enough. I wish it was. It's not enough to get us all the way to the desk, but I think we can go far in that area. We just haven't been able to get our points across yet. All the rest of the decisions are just really hard decisions about what we need to stop doing. They're all painful.
A quick question. We talked a lot about savings and tightening the belt, basically. I have a question coming from a different background. What have we done on the supply side? For instance, we just have two gas units that came online, and we've chosen to reorganize and say that it's a sustainability department versus a utility department. My question is there a way to generate income through selling back to the grid, through cranking up the coal plant and the two gas plants, and actually getting the supply side increased to have more cash flow? That's just a question.
Yeah,
and I don't know all the regulations.
Yeah, nor do I. And our emphasis has been on the expense reduction side. And so your comment's a very fair one, an appropriate one. Now we'll actually make sure the facilities folks are asking that question. We are trying to, we need to look at both. And we need creative suggestions on how to do that. When we've looked at it to date, we're not seeing a lot of opportunities. You know, institutionally, you know, we have asked the question about should we increase the student body? And it answered that, at least at this stage, the answer being no, we already have a little bit, about 100 students entering class this year, but to expand it any further, we've said no. So we've asked it in that arena, but you know, an example like you, I haven't heard that raised.
Yeah, actually, it did. Yes, it did. It came through the suggestion box. And so far, anyway, we're not producing enough to sell back to the grid. Enough to make selling back to the grid with all what you have to do to make yourself grid saleable or whatever it was. I mean, they did answer the question because it came through the suggestion box.
Mm-hmm. We've told the coal unit, and it's not even running at a level it could be running at. And you can get 6 cents a kilowatt, I believe it's still the amount you can get selling back to the grid. And we have the gas units online, and I just put that out there saying, and I understand there's a whole lot of concern about coal usage, carbon footprint. I'm also saying that that's something to think about.
Right, but remember that they took them off, the coal units off, for more than just our commitment to carbon neutrality. It was also because of where those were in their maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost of getting those back up and operating. We actually had, it's a great question, and Jim actually answered it from the suggestion. So the cost of what we would have had to have done to them to get them ready was more than we had available to get them up and running.
Thank
you. So, yeah, the bigger question behind your question, I want to just say, because we are in the communication, every single thing we got from the suggestions were run down on the suggestion box. And what we didn't do a very good job of, and what we're talking about now, is going back and making sure people know that, because we got great suggestions. And some of the utilities savings that we're actually using in the savings suggestions are coming from what we got out of the suggestion box. And I don't think we did a terrific job of letting people know that, because a lot of the things that we're using now, they didn't all come from Bain. They came actually from the campus. So the communications people are actually trying to make sure that we get back to the campus about all the things that the campus told us to run down for saving. So these are some of the things that we got from campus went to the utilities group, and they formed some of the things that utilities are actually looking at right now. Because, like, I wouldn't have even known what you were talking about.
There was one really specific question I think it's worth making sure I spend a couple minutes on it. I know I'm just out of time, so really quick. Jason, you had passed on a question about the new medical research building done in New York with a medical college. So let me just kind of address that. You should understand the budgets between the IFCA campus and the medical college are really managed very separately. In fact, we're reinforcing the separateness in that, you know, at the moment. Largely because of this building, kind of highlights the issue. The medical college did have a budget deficit problem in the same way Ithaca did at a different scale. And they were able to make those corrections on a one-year basis and get back to a balanced budget. But they had, we were having this conversation a year ago, we'd be absolutely saying they had a budget deficit. They made their corrections coming into fiscal 10, and they're in a balanced budget situation. The issue of the medical research building is a strategic priority, a critical strategic priority for the medical college. To meet, it's been a long time part of the strategic plan. It's part of their direction as a medical college, and from the president to the trustees, the folks at the medical college, it's critically important. And it has been within all our financial planning over the last year and a half. So it's not a surprise to us, because we thought about debt as a critical element of this equation. It has been in all the financial planning. And for the Ithaca campus impact on this thing, there is no impact on it. It is being funded with a significant amount of fundraising. It's been very successful and is on a positive momentum and debt. But again, that debt capacity has been planned for the last year and a half, longer than that actually, but it's been in our financial planning for the last year and a half. And in the implementation of it won't affect the campus.
They pay their own operating. There's a wall between their operating expenses and ours, so it doesn't have any impact on the campus. And their fundraising that they raise the funds for is all targeted to that medical building. So we neither benefit from nor are affected by that building. The other question that you asked was about the SRIs. So bear in mind that the returns to the payroll are not on regular payroll. Those are all casual returns. And so those have been, as was planned, reduced throughout the time, so they've been all back on the casual payroll as retirees. And so they came back in fairly large numbers, as we expected they would, to help transition their work. So we had a very large number of them come back right away. So they were, there's probably about half of them back right away, helping to transition their work back down to about 150. By the end of the year, they're down to about 80 of them now. And they cost us about 5% of the payroll they cost when they were on the regular payroll. It's about 95% savings of payroll. So that program did exactly what we expected it to do. So the people we have back are helping out as we had hoped. Of the about 80 some that are still here, about 35 are in sponsor funds, so they're not actually on the university.
So I'll let you take it from here. I'm going to watch
the time. Just one quick question about the Bain report. I heard yesterday at the leadership breakfast that there is not going to be an official paper report from Bain. And I guess I think a lot of us were probably assuming there would be, looking at like the North Carolina model, like, oh, they had a published report. Can you speak to what that is?
The Bain report, the pointing out by Bain of where our opportunities are, it is what we're doing. And so if you go to the, again, I point you to the website that is, under this initiative coordination office, that essentially is, Bain gave us a bunch of information and kind of set us on the path. Now Cornell, not Bain, is leading that effort. And we're doing that through, as we're reporting out, fully through that website of what it is we're doing. And as we take action, as we make decisions, it's going to all be within that. So that's where I would kind of direct it. And that's really the, what I would call our reporting of, that effort.
I think that's a fair, I think your point, though, is a fair point. When we started with Bain, I think we sort of said the same thing. I think we did say, North Carolina got a report. I suppose we'll get a report. Remember, you pay Bain for everything that they provide for you. So I think our sense was we got our general sense of what they gave us. That was good. But, that's a lot of money to receive a report. I think we have the general information that we needed from them. And our sense is that Paul's leading the effort now. And, you have to do a cost-benefit analysis about whether or not it's worth spending the money so that they can develop a report for you. And whether that's really worth it when you have somebody who understands what they told you, and we have somebody who understands what they told us.
Hey, we're not making any decisions from that report. It's kind of set us on a path, which are all the reviews I took you through, and we'll make decisions based on what we learn from that. We're certainly using some of the Bain intelligence, if you will, to set it, but we own it, and we're doing it now, and all these review teams. So. Thanks, but there's a bunch of review teams that really know what they're doing that are not working on this thing.
I think our effort needs to be on getting every area that we're looking at on that website and making sure people feel like everything we're doing is as transparent as possible. And that, I think, is where we're struggling because it's happening so fast. And I think what we're still struggling with is the sense that people have that somebody must know the answer to all this stuff, and they're just not telling us. I have that feeling sometimes that Paul knows, and he's just not telling me. The truth of the matter is, I've said this in public settings, and it's an awful analogy. But it's like watching somebody make sausage, and I'm a vegetarian. So but you're watching this thing go on, and you're thinking, wow, this is like really hard to watch. And you're watching as the institution is struggling through decisions where there's just no easy answer. And I think we just have to continue to try to listen to you and get as much information on that website as possible. Get Paul and me and everyone else out to people and have people say, we just don't feel like we're hearing enough, or it's better to just go out and say, you don't know. You're not out enough. The provost's not out enough. President's not out enough. Whatever. I think it's better for people to see folks, even if they're not really saying anything.
And I'm certainly willing to go out and talk. And you hear, like Mary said, we're making sausage. Probably is a great analogy. Mm-hmm. it's not something that should give you a lack of confidence. In my opinion, it's actually, we're in a good spot. We're talking about it. We're planning it. We are planning. We're figuring out as we go here. But there's a bunch of folks really putting a lot of effort into it, and we're going to make a rational decision. We're not rushing. I think it would scare me more if I heard a bunch of definitive actions when there's no way we could know it at this point. We really don't. We're figuring it out, and that's why, you know, from the Bain report, it really is irrelevant. They set us on a path, and we now own the relevance of figuring out what do we think the savings could be, why do we think it could be that, and how do we actually implement towards it, and then sustain it over time. And we'll share all that.
My college, AAP, is filled with nervous Nellies. You mentioned that, is it possible that someone from the administration, if we were to organize, and this is theoretical and off the top of my head, but if the permissions and all that stuff, would someone from your office be willing to talk to the staff about what this might be very helpful?
I just came from a group over in engineering right before this, so department managers were ahead on that.
Great.
Certainly.
I'm just curious if you've looked to other universities for how they're addressing. I'm sure there's our other comparable institutions around the country facing the exact
Actually,
same.
Yes, and I think I would have to say that. By the way, at UNC, they really haven't done a whole lot since the report. I mean, a lot of my colleagues haven't really gone out and said a whole heck of a lot. The leadership teams are meeting and you know worried and talking, but. You know, people are dealing with it in the way their structures tend to deal with these things. Yale put out a notice. They pulled back on a lot of their benefits. You know, they yanked back some benefits, yanked back on their salary increases. You know, people are doing what they feel like they need to do.
Probably varies from institution to institution.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah, Dartmouth just did some stuff, yanked back their financial aid, did some layoffs. You know, everybody's doing what their culture tends to do.
Yeah, one more question.
I'm just wondering if you guys have like a target number for next year's deficit.
Like you say a target number?
Yeah, like last year was $68 million. Do you want to get us like 48 or 38 or...
Right now, our planning number's in the 30s.
So, should we anticipate layoffs for them through 2016? As you implement your plans, obviously, as you restructure.
That's a fair question. Let me speak to that. I mean, we are going to have to do layoffs. There's no doubt about it. But the sooner we can know where we're heading, the better it will be for me because we can use attrition. The problem that I'm having from an HR standpoint is until we know what areas we're trying to realign, I have no ability to use attrition because I don't know where to say, look, when you get an opening, hold it open. Because I don't know what areas we're trying to change.
Right. At this point, it feels a little bit like the cart before the horse.
Right.
A little bit because, I mean, they're coming down to the colleges and saying you need to cut this amount. But you don't know exactly where you're going with this over here. So
that's right.
In retrospect, sometimes some people may be cut, and then later on you'll be like, well, maybe we didn't really need to do that.
That's right. But we didn't use any attrition this past year because people held open as much as they could, but they had really no way of doing that. That's why Esther I was difficult. We gave individuals the opportunity to choose to leave, but it wasn't position based; it was person based.
Right.
So the sooner that these reorgs tell you what way you're going to look, so I'm just going to use HR because that way I only offend myself. let's say that we redesign HR and I know where it's going to go by 2015. I can say to my organization, look, this is the future state of the place by 2015. So, you know, here's the way we're going to look. And as people go, I can shift people strategically. Mm-hmm. I'm going to retrain you. This opening came up over here, domino, domino, domino. I'm going to retrain you to look to be in this role. And I'm going to hold this job open. I have an ability to be strategic and use attrition. until I know whether HR will be one of those areas and whether my design gets approved by the leadership, if it is, I can't know whether I can use attrition. So the longer you have, the better able you are to use attrition. The shorter time you have, layoff is your only answer.
The piece, just coming back around the question, do we have a target? Again, it's this kind of, once we have a plan, then I think we can better shape the financial targets. And so for, I don't know if we have a meaningful target right now that we're planning towards. I think we're trying to get a plan together that allows us to say, how can we solve this within the shortest period of time, but under a rational basis? If we can use attrition rather than layoffs, and we take another year to do that, we'll take the other year to do that. I'm fairly confident in that. So to think about, I uttered the 30s, I think it's somewhat a meaningless number. Do we get about a month or two out? And really when we go to the trustees in May of saying what that number is, because by that time we will have an informed plan. So I just urge you, I want to be honest with you, we're thinking, but it's somewhat meaningless. I want to also be honest with you. Right now it really doesn't have a lot of meaning on it. We can put the plan behind that allows us to get there.
Recognizing that the trustees, because it is their job, are pressing to see something meaningful happen in FY11 because it's their job. And recognizing that the health of the institution financially is a factor for the university in a lot of ways.
What do you mean they want to see something meaningful, like towards, progress?
Towards financial
balancing this budget.
Yeah. I mean, that's their job. When the place gets rocked the way that we did financially, they need to know that we are making a serious move towards budget equilibrium. And which is why, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, the president has been so strong about saying this community has a, every one of us can be leaders on the non-personnel side. I hate to keep going back to the same thing, but we have choices we all can make about what we do in utilities and what we do in procurement and what we do about the things on the non-personnel side. So, we actually do have control over those things. What we do and how we speak and what we say about the non-personnel side are things we can make a good faith attempt to jumpstart those savings together. Those will make a difference in FY11. The quicker we get those savings on those sides, the easier it will be. That FY11 is my year of worry because I can't do anything about attrition management in FY11. It's the worst year coming up. And so that year is the year where I'm the most worried about layoffs because I have no criticism of the board. They're doing their job. And it's the hardest year for us to be able to use anything soft on the personnel side. And the campus has a choice to make in terms of how we pull together, how we are a community in terms of the non-personnel side. And so that's the year where we have the least control over the personnel side. And after that, I think in 2012 and 2013, we can do a little more on attrition. We don't have a huge turnover rate, but I think that we'll see retirements will go back up. I'm hoping that we'll continue to see recovery. People will start to retire again, and we'll have turnover. Hopefully the economy will pick back up, and we can start to use our attrition a little more. So I do have optimism on the use of attrition once we see the design. We actually do know what we're doing. It's just you're watching us do it. And I mean, Paul's got a really yicky job, and I'm a real pill, too. So, he's got me, chirping in his ear the whole time. But we can be better community citizens on the non-personnel side if we all try a little harder. That's what I think.
I like
working with him. Sure. That's because I'm
going to
chirp
in
his ear on the way out.
Thank you, Paul and Mary.
Thank you
very much.
Let me know. Come back whenever you'd like.
Okay. Just to follow up, there are some strategic or public discussions and brown bag lunches coming up. I sent you information on that yesterday for the next that are coming up on strategic plan, and I've already sent you the link to reimagining. Mm-hmm. that Paul mentioned, and so you'll have that in your email too, and that hopefully will be helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving on with our agenda. Beth McKinney is not present, so we don't have a report from the employee elected trustee. Report from our UA representative.
None.
None, Leon?
No.
Okay. GTFA?
We had a voting body meeting on Monday. The main content was a presentation by the computer that was much less contentful than this presentation was, so I don't think I have anything additional to share from that. Apparently it's not going to affect your student body as much as it will other populations, for example. We had a busy resolution evening. We passed 5 resolutions.
How long was that meeting?
An hour and a half. And that was much more resolutions than we normally do.
Don't have a lot of time.
The resolutions were to appoint a member to the Cinema Advisory Board, to endorse a proposal to rejuvenate the Big Red Barn and try and begin fundraising and discussion about that, to create a joint student judicial council that would allow all the various judicial councils to meet together and have streamlined processing and training and discussion, to express concern that environmental sustainability wasn't an explicit part of the strategic planning draft document, and that was in response to a University Assembly Sustainability Committee initiative that submitted a similar resolution. And then finally, a resolution proposing to use a review of the Graduate Community Initiative as a tool for the graduate GPSA to engage in the strategic planning process. We invited various stakeholders in the Graduate Community Initiative to a town hall meeting that will be held on March 1st from 5:30 to 7 o'clock. So I'm personally most excited by that last resolution because it's a method for the graduate student body to seriously engage with the strategic planning initiative. And there wasn't really room for anything else in the meeting. That pretty much covered it. I think there's a spectrum of resolutions in that the undergrads, I think, are up to something like 50 resolutions this year so far, and I don't know how meaningful any of those resolutions really become. They get diluted a lot. I think the employee assembly approach of having few significant resolutions is a very good way to influence. So
when we go, you know, we're up to like what, 4, 5, 6, 7?
So this brings us up to 11 for this year. And
that's all on one hand.
Thank you. Faculty Senate?
Hey, Jason, can I butt in real quick? I need to take off to go to Rochester.
Sure.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye, John.
Bye.
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 Oh. I should have something to say.
So the faculty senate meeting was comprised mostly of what you just heard from Paul and from the provost, and some more detail behind the detail that we heard. There was also a spirited discussion about the closing of smaller libraries on campus.
Okay.
And a resolution was passed, more or less procedural, to attempt to require that process to have faculty and students and community input into which libraries are closed among the 10 or 11 smaller ones that are sort of on the chopping block for potential closure. So that's passed.
Do they have a time frame for those potential closures?
Well, you know, it's like what you heard. It's
like by the end of this fiscal year.
They're looking to make a decision, I think, this fiscal year. When something might actually be closed is another question. The transition, the personnel, the et cetera. But I think they're trying to get that decision made this fiscal year. There was a discussion about the erstwhile faculty club. This shows up every once every year or so about those who feel strongly that there should be a faculty club. The faculty club that you may not even know about has been a little room off the lunch area in the Statler downstairs there, and that's now been taken away, and so the faculty club is actually in the bar area now on the first floor of the hotel school. And there are those who feel, and I'm among them, that having lunch with colleagues is an important part of the thinking, planning, relaxing, creative process. and to lose that or to inhibit that, I think is a bad idea. But Cornell has never had a Harvard club or a Yale club. If you go to those places, and you're steeped in 300 years of rooms and things. So that's, you know, so expressions of interest in keeping that alive and trying to do a better job at making that possible were expressed. Those are the three main areas that came up.
Thank you. Finance?
Nothing to report. We're, to use the phrase, where our budget is right size. We're in balance.
Can that go towards the deficit?
They tend to spend off the top and contribute.
Our budget is not very large, but we did 10% or?
Well, we talked about the possibility of, yes, of taking 10% and reducing our expenditures. So, you know, we can look into that, see what we don't use, and if it doesn't get gobbled up, we could maybe distribute it some way.
Report from the chair. Yesterday was a leadership breakfast with Kent Fox and Ed Lawler attending, giving an update on the strategic planning and pretty much a lot of the same similar types of updates and just different components of the wheel. So I don't have anything else. Can we take a look at our February 3rd minutes? And after a minute or so of review, I'll entertain a motion.
Either Devin's name is misspelled on the sign or at the end of the minute. The sign looks right to me.
Yeah. And the adjournment?
Yeah, it's in the adjournment.
Okay. You got that, Amy?
No.
It's in the adjournment.
The bottom of the
XV.
Oh, she's got an extra letter.
Yeah. There's an extra U in there.
Oh.
Okay.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes as character amended?
I so move.
Second.
All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstain? Minutes passed. Thank you. Committee reports, Executive Committee.
Our last Executive Committee meeting, we all were able to meet except you, correct, Ellen? I think you're 100% right there. We really discussed a lot what's going on down at the Schwartz Center and possibly how it could have been handled better. And if there's any way that you know, when announcements like that need to be made, that there's some sensitivity guidelines essentially put into place, whether it's through the EA or through the university. I think we discussed our meeting coming up with Paul here and getting in questions for him, and we also discussed the newsletter coming up, which I believe Gary said is just about done. He's got to type it up. He doesn't really need any more fodder for the upcoming newsletter so we can look for information for the next one. I think it was a pretty simple little meeting. Okay. Got anything to add from that one? Or Tom, you were there?
No, but so it was add a just question for Amy. Our email is of the possibility of attending a brown bag. I didn't know that was the what we were discussing about with Mary attending our meeting with the brown bag.
Yeah, well, we have a meeting scheduled for the 3rd with Mary, correct?
Here.
But there's right. also yeah. a brown bag meeting with Kent Fox. Is that correct?
Yeah. On the 3rd. It's an open...
Yeah.
Right. So do we want to cancel our meeting and all go to the brown bag with Kent Fox, or do we want to just keep our meeting and have it at the same time?
I say keep our meeting. I don't know about...
Mary thought there would be some of you that would want to hear them interested in the presentation. So she's going to reschedule to another meeting, if that's what you all want to do. And then you could attend the brown bag, because it's exactly the same time.
Is that our next meeting? Next yeah. upcoming meeting?
Mm-hmm.
The March 3rd meeting?
There's also, on the same topic, a panel discussion. It's basically the same thing, just the brown bags tend to be smaller and at lunchtime. And the panel discussions tend to be a little bit larger at 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So every single topic has a brown bag and a strategic and a panel discussion. And basically it's the same players at both. So for strategic plan, Ed and Kent will be at the brown bag and also on next Wednesday at 4:30 at their panel discussion. So
and that schedule you said is on the page. On the
I just put that out yesterday about the strategic. Trying to not confuse people.
Right.
And when I know about these things, I try to give you the next looming. I'm actually saying it to all members of all assemblies. These are the next looming opportunities to meet and talk, and this is the topic. And there are more planned. There's one on the ICO that Paul's going to do at the end of March. Mary's going to do a couple of managing change.
So
I'm trying to get those out to everybody.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's only 2 weeks from now, so do we really think there's going to be a lot of new information in between now and the next 2 weeks from Paul?
But this isn't the two of them. This is Professor Lawler and
let me back up a second here. So we currently have March 3rd with Mary Opperman attending. Now, my question is, with Mary attending today and with this major update to the assembly today, are we going to have anything to even talk to Mary about at our next meeting that would be worthwhile of her time? So with that said, we could cancel her attending because unless we have some big thing to talk about. We've been in a lot of communication with Mary over the term here. March 17th, we had decided that we are going to cancel the meeting in lieu of going to Soup and Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not be here that week as well. So if we canceled March 3rd, we'd have our next meeting would not be until April 7th.
Well, why cancel the meeting? Can't we just still have a meeting on the 3rd?
We could, yes.
Just that's a regular...
We have a meeting, but we don't go to the brown bag. We cancel Mary because probably won't have...
Right.
When would we get Mary on the schedule again, though?
Mary is scheduled on May 19th with President Scorton.
Maybe we could schedule her in another meeting, not so close to this one, but before President Scorton.
Well, we're running out of meetings. We have three meetings before...
Also, I would just like to add that her calendar is probably gone until probably February 2012.
Yeah.
So it's not like
why not have her come?
Yeah.
She
just can't come over.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe people want to think about, I have one or two questions I'd like to ask her, so maybe people want to think about if there are questions they need to ask her, and I think especially in light of there's going to be a lot of layoffs coming down in the month of March.
Is there any way we could just make it 4th? We could all go to the brown bag on the 3rd and meet with Mary on the 4th?
That would be a good question to ask. And remind everybody that David and I and Beth meet with Mary on a somewhat regular basis. So if you have any questions in between anything, any meetings, submit them to us, and we can send them.
An email or
you guys can set a meeting for whenever you want. If you want to have a meeting on Thursday, have a regular EA meeting, that's fine. If you want to have a meeting the Wednesday that you will alternate, that's fine. So you guys can set a meeting anytime you want. If you want to go to the ground bed and you still want to go to the student hall.
Well, this is just me. Everybody's around the table have their own opinion. But I don't think it's necessary to have Mary come to the next meeting.
Let's kind of do a straw poll on that, first of all. How many people think that we should cancel Mary attending the meeting? 1, 2, 3, 4.
If we cancel Mary, we should go to the brown bag. Otherwise, why bother canceling Mary?
What's the topic of the brown bag?
The strategic plan? The strategic plan. The next 5 years or so.
The thing that we read. Okay.
2010 to 2015.
Ed Lawler, wasn't he here? Or was I at a different meeting? Didn't Ed come here? And
No, not him.
Oh, he didn't come here. So he did that. I should mention at the Faculty Senate, he also presented on the strategic plan, which is sort of a higher level of what we heard today, which fits into the overall.
Let me pause our conversation here and see if we can get through the rest of the committee reports and then come back to this meeting discussion because we're running out of potential time. We no longer have a grants committee. Our proposal was accepted by the president, and I sent you all that email. So I will direct the Employees Assembly's office to make the appropriate changes to our charter and update the website accordingly. Staff recognition and awards.
We are moving forward with the George Peter Award. They're working on a date, right, for that.
So it's very difficult. The person's not on disability right now, and so we're looking at the future.
But that is moving forward, and I'm working with Ari on setting up that Kudos mailbox, and Leslie wrote a nice little blurb for the newsletter, so that'll go out in the newsletter, and hopefully people will start recognizing each other.
Communication?
Friday, I think it's this Friday, I have a meeting with other communication chair members, like from EA and EA and SA, I believe, and it's Tommy Bruce wants us to meet and talk about how we can use like the Chronicle and the Paw Print to, I think, better promote EA, SA, and GPSA, and just how we can use our current communication to promote our activities. I don't really have all the details yet, so I didn't have the meeting yet, but that's what's going on right now in communications world. So if anyone has ideas.
I can ask people if you like.
real quick, Peggy.
Yeah, it's actually a presence on the CUinfo.cornell.edu page that may lead to other opportunities, and we're meeting with folks from all of the assemblies to see how we might feed into some type of box that feeds information about what's happening in the assemblies.
Hmm.
So it's baby steps on this one, so we're seeing what technology can do for us and changing that what's in.
Anything else?
No, so I'll be reporting on that meeting. I'll bring you all the information from that after next Friday.
Personnel policy?
Nothing new to report.
Internal operations?
Nothing new to report.
Nothing on university benefits. Employee education?
The Employee Education Committee generated a list of questions to ask the HR about benefits, and they decided to hold a meeting with us. That would include not just Maureen, who's in charge of that benefit, but also the director of HR and her immediate supervisor. So it's going to be an important meeting, and it'll be at, we've sent her some, a list of questions. I think I've sent that out. I think all of you hopefully have seen that, those list of questions. What we'd really like, we reserved a larger room now in room 163 down in HR, with the hope that we can encourage people to come and participate in the meeting as well. So I'll be sending out more information about that in the coming weeks.
This is
This is coming up on March 4th. It will be Thursday.
Don't you have a meeting tomorrow?
I do have a meeting tomorrow. Of course, everyone's welcome to come. The point of the meeting tomorrow will be on how to publicize this and, you know, how to get this out, the news out for anyone who might be interested in talking to them about the employee education benefits.
Thank you. Cornell and transition update, I think our business of the day covered a lot of that. Real quickly, any old, new, or open forum items before we just go back to talking about our agenda calendar?
Sure.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, charter review.
Oh. Not on the agenda, we'll add it. Charter review.
Just really quickly, we put together a committee that is going to meet over the next 3 weeks to put together a finalized plan for what we want to move forward with our charter change promotion. And that committee is myself, Gary, Alan, and Ari, and Donna Goff.
Thank you.
I was just curious, maybe Leanne can answer this, but were you going to serve soup at the Soup and Hope? Like, we're going to try to have a presence there and wear our name tags? Or we're just going?
I'm not sure. I think we were going to go with our presence. And
so we talked about serving soup.
Let's take this offline to figure out for a good thing to remind us. Maybe you can talk to Leslie.
What day do you want to do it?
Well, we're all going
on March 17th.
Okay. I'll get back with you on it.
Okay.
We can make that happen.
Okay, so to recap quickly our meetings, we have six more meetings of the term, okay? Our current calendar says that we should have Mary Offerman at our next meeting. The following meeting after that is, in lieu of meeting, we will be having our presence at the Soup and Hope. Then we have the April 7th, 21st, and May 5th, with currently no scheduled people for those dates. And then the last date, May 19th, President Gorton and Mary Offerman attending.
We're looking for an alternate date for that because that's not a really good date for them to come.
Well, yeah. Did you talk to the president's office yet on that?
I put in a request to have another one date considered.
Okay. If it doesn't turn out, that's not a big deal. I was kind of just thinking of more of like the terms of our last year. It's, you know, what to talk about. I mean, we will be having some people's terms in the EA end at the end of this term. And then we have elections in April, don't we?
Elections
are in April. So there will be a large majority of you staying on the EA at that time, so having the President and Mary speak at the end isn't all that bad. So getting back to March 3rd, is there a compelling need to attend the brown bag? I guess you should say that.
I should like to go because I haven't had an opportunity to really listen to speakers talk about some of these general strategic plans. Mm-hmm. From my point of view, it would be helpful for me to go to that.
Okay. If you know,
maybe some members could go and report back to those who don't go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the next meeting.
I generally found that the brown bag discussions and the public forum are fairly similar in content. And so if you can't make the brown bag but can make the evening forum, you get a lot of the same information that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it would be nice to still have Mary at our meeting. I think that, as they both admitted right here, things are happening very quickly. And I think, you know, the emphasis today was on what Paul is doing, and I would be curious to hear more of what's going on with HR and planning and kind of the timeline for that stuff and those things that we didn't get to ask Mary today. So I think
that's a good point. Maybe a lot could change in 2 weeks.
I thought what I heard is that they're taking their time. They're not rushing into anything.
Well, it's not how things are actually happening, I think. So they're happening much quicker than
there's a difference between what's happening,
right,
you know, in the
department. In that larger format.
Okay. Big picture, and then there's the small picture, and I think the small picture changes are a lot quicker, whereas the big picture changes are going to be spread out more. There are those of us who are very scared about the small picture changes.
So should we just keep everything the way it is. March 3rd is a regular meeting with Mary Opperman. And then...
And are there any other people we want to schedule in for any of this? I mean, are there any issues that we bring? I can't think of any.
We've had a tentative idea of having Joanne DiStefano talk about procurement.
I think that would be great.
And wasn't Mike Powers going to come back?
He said he's willing to, but you all have to invite him.
Okay. And Mike was working at the time for out of the provost's office with Bain, right?
Yeah, or,
but that's kind of been shifted over to Paul Streeter.
No, he works in Tommy's office. I think he had the role of monitoring the question box, the suggestion box. And I think, if I remember correctly, what he was bringing to this group was some of the suggestions that had been made and how they may have been acted on.
Okay.
We could try to hit the areas that Paul outlined, the utilities, procurement, IT. If we want to get those, we can get those April 7th, 21, and May 5th. And because those are the areas that are under the microscope.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll review the potential upcoming people.
And we can get presents, or if something falls away with that, it's probably a good idea that Paul, to invite Paul back at the end. Okay, you told us what was happening in February.
Good.
Here we are in May, and the trustees
update. That's good, true. Yep. When is the trustee meeting in May? Because we have May 5th.
The Friday before commencement.
Yeah, so at the end of the month.
Oh,
Memorial
okay.
Memorial Day weekend, Friday.
So even that past May 19th, all that's going to happen after our last...
Well, trustee meetings in March and April, too.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a lot to report, I think, by early May.
Okay. All right, so we will keep Mary Opperman on the schedule. Just so that we can plan in advance, please come up with your Mary Opperman questions now and submit them to me as soon as possible, because we'd like to get those questions to her a few days, a week in advance. Okay. So get your questions into me right away so we can get them to Mary's office so that she's prepared to answer any questions. Okay. Is there anything else? Entertain a motion?
So moved.
Yeah. You don't know what my motion in my mind was. Any objection? No. Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.